Off the speaker on the computer.
Okay. I'd like to call the meeting to order for it is 6 o'clock. Can we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, justice for all. Okay, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Gino Di Giovanni,
Here.
Brian Capolo,
here.
Dana Florenza,
Here.
Carly Pecht,
Here.
Carlene Galuzzi.
She's excused.
Okay, record should reflect you have four members present, so you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Okay, number four, approval of minutes. We have none. Can I have a motion to table, please?
So moved.
Dana, second.
I'll second.
Brian, all in favor? Okay. Motion carries. We'll go to number five, public portion. Ladies and gentlemen that are present here in City Hall and also on Zoom, what we're going to do for tonight's meeting is under number five here, the public portion. If anyone would like to speak in reference or regarding any other business, you can do so now. If you have any comments in the future for the presentation that will go on, we'll speak at the intermissions for each section. But I'm going to allow the public to ask questions. We'll refrain from one question. If there's questions, we're going to try not to ask them multiple times. So you could state your name and address for the record and just second a question that was asked prior to. But right now, under number five, we're going to open up the public portion to any comments, questions, or concerns that have anything to do with any other business besides line item number six for the study update. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak? If you're on Zoom, you could unmute your mic and just state your name and address for the record. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to speak? Here in the audience, third and last time, anyone from the public wish to speak? Yes.
I'd like to make a motion to create an item in the agenda to open up the public hearing after the presentations.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do is once Evan starts his presentation, he's going to stop at certain sections of it, and then we'll entertain any questions or discussion at the end of those instead of doing it at the end. The reason why is there'll be a lot of information to digest all at one time and then to have a question and answer. So I think there'll be a few different sections, so we'll do it at that time. But
Very good. Okay.
is that good?
Yep.
All right. Third and last time, anyone from the public wish to speak? Okay, without hearing any, can I have a motion to close the public portion? Dana, second. I'll second. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Okay. We'll move on to number six, feasibility study update by Steinberg Hart. So, for tonight's presentation, we have a representative of Steinberg Hart. Evan is here that's going to go over where we stand to give a current update. And, Evan, the floor is all yours.
Excellent. Let me share my screen.
Brian, once he gets all set up, could you make sure just give us a yes or no to make sure that you could see what you could? Okay. Thank
Yeah,
you.
I see the presentation right now, Gino.
Excellent. Well, it's good to be with you tonight. Our team collectively has made very good progress in the study. As Gino mentioned, I'm Evan Delli Paoli, a principal with Steinberg Hart. We're the architects and lead organizers of the study. We are joined by a series of team member other firms of a variety of disciplines, each contributing their own expertise to the study. web management, arts market consultants who did the lead of the market needs assessment portion of the study. Duncan and his team actually worked on the early 2000s original study for the Sterling Opera House. So Duncan has been part of our team throughout this effort. The stages consultants, our theater consultant, Alex Stoll, and his team leading the theater consulting effort as part of the study. Alec also joined Duncan in the early 2000s original study. And so those two have really been contributing the specialty consulting for the work compiled to date. In addition to them, our team has been rounded out by McLaren Engineering, structural engineers who have evaluated the existing building and some of the recommendations that we'll describe in tonight's discussion, as well as Kohler Ronan engineers out of Danbury for mechanical, electrical, plumbing, fire protection, and life safety. And so all of our team members have reached a critical mass of documentation, diagrams, narratives describing both the evaluation of the existing building and proposed recommendations for renovation that are now currently in the hands of our cost estimator. And so tonight's a great time to meet with you all to discuss our current updates. We have a lot on the agenda, so I'll try to go quickly through the discussion, but also stop at key moments for questions. We want to give the group an overall status update of where we are in the study, schedule, and anticipation of our next meetings coming up, our overall process and what it's been through the working process of the study, current findings and recommendations related to the market needs assessment, the existing conditions of the building, historic requirements. The building's on the National Register, so we'll talk a bit about that, the capital improvement recommendations. And then topics related to scoping and cost, phasing and suggested phasing of the work, what can happen as an initial phase versus subsequent phases of work later down the road. As I mentioned, we're in the process of generating a cost estimate for the work that'll be included in the final study. We don't have numbers just yet, but we will be discussing a little bit the structure of the cost estimate so you can anticipate the type of information that'll be coming out when those numbers are shared in about a month's time or so. And then organization of the final report, sort of an outline of the types of information that we'll be going through. Where we are in our current status, the market needs assessment, Duncan's work in assessing the local market, your local region, is complete. We could talk about some of the big outcomes of that work tonight. The existing conditions, all of our consultants, as I mentioned, have been to the building multiple times, evaluated the current state of the building from their vantage points, and their reports and information have been compiled in draft form and shared again with our cost estimators. And our capital improvement recommendations are mostly complete for the extent of being able to put prices to them, and I'll share an update about that. So really on our open list here for the status of our study, we're in the process of cost estimation and in the process of compiling the final report. Schedule and next steps. We are here today to give you an update about the study. We anticipate coming back in about a month's time to the March 9th commission meeting to give you an update about the final report, the cost estimate numbers, and any refinements to the work that you see today. So a bit about our process. Our process throughout the study has been really three-pronged. I'm not going to read the text on the screen, but essentially focused on three things, as I alluded to: the market needs assessment, first and foremost, understanding what the local region, local market can support for cultural arts and the types of events that people want to attend and pay ticket money for. That was one aspect of the study. Existing conditions assessment, the second, evaluating the building. The building was built in the late 1800s, evaluating the structure, the architectural components, the historical significance, and other aspects to better understand how we can strategically renovate the building in a cost-effective way while meeting the needs of what was revealed out of the market assessment process. And then capital improvement recommendations, all along the way, making sure that what recommendations we're making are strategic, are following what the market can support, what can follow ticket revenue generation on day one when the venue opens, and that we're not going too far down the road of extravagantly renovating the building beyond what the financial logic can support. And so three tiers of what our process has been. First, I'll describe some of the findings out of the market needs assessment process, the work that web management led and worked with us through. Throughout their process, they spoke with some of you. They've evaluated local region within 30 and 60 minute drive times. They evaluated competition venues, about 38 or so of varying types, but four major components that they focused on in the market needs assessment. Number one, evaluating forces and trends. In the 20 plus years from the original study, the cultural arts, performing arts, globally, the world of performing arts has changed drastically. And so one of the key findings that they wanted to make sure is iterated in their report is the broader definition of what cultural activities really means in today's world, and making sure that that broader overview is understood as far as the programming that might be considered for the Sterling. Assessing the market, not just within the constraints of Derby proper, but again within the larger region, 30, 60-minute drive times beyond, to pull from really the likely pool of audience members that would attend events at the Sterling. And so that understanding both Derby and beyond was important as part of the market assessment. As I alluded to, evaluating the competition within that sort of radius of drive times. There were about 38 venues that Webb assessed of varying types, from performing arts facilities, cinemas, meeting and event spaces, ranging in seat capacities, many of which were in the 1,200 to 1,500 seat range of various types. An important gap to note that was found in the market study were sort of mid-size venues between upwards of 300 and maybe less than that 1,500 to 1,200 that they saw in some of the competition venues, which I'll come back to later in the slideshow when we talk a little bit about seat count and what some of the expectations could be for the chamber of the Sterling that we're beginning to find. And then considering user demand, the types of potential uses for the facility. They really went through the gamut of possibilities to assess what the most likely contenders would be: nonprofit rentals, commercial rentals, film, education programs, community gatherings, and lastly, here on the screen, bolded in orange, presented live arts and entertainment, which is really, as I'll come to in the next slide, the likeliest use case. And so, out of the outcome of their market needs assessment, what I want to leave the group here with are three big next steps. One is the recommended use for the building. Out of all of the possibilities, what the market needs assessment made a suggestion about was that it be used for commercial entertainment, meaning live music, comedy, popular music, those types of events as the key and foremost use. Ticketed events that would be geared around those types of programming. But in addition to those uses, that there might be secondary uses that support the building, that it's important that once the building is opened, that it remain as actively used as possible. And so there is a host of secondary programming that would be used to support the building and keep the lights on, keep people in the building, in and around those primary uses. And those secondary uses might range from meetings and events, paying market rate rent, so being able to get in some rental income and opportunity, curated film programming, community and nonprofit and school-based groups, community gatherings, civic events. And so those maybe four groupings of different types of secondary uses, again, would help keep the building open, keep the lights on, keep it full of use in and around the primary use of popular music, comedy, those types of events. Moving forward beyond the study, there are two key next steps that the market assessment leaves us with that we recommend you all taking. One is completing a business plan. And so while the study will evaluate the capital costs for construction in a total cost way, which I'll come to later in the presentation, the operational costs, the business plan of what it would take to operate the venue, is yet another study that would need to be taken in the future as a next step. And key and sort of linked with that is number three on the screen, finding an operator. Who is going to actually operate the venue? We recommend that this is a third party, The business plan number two could happen in tandem with that operating entity on board. Out of the web report, there are five recommended next steps to find and enlist the an operator entity. One would be to build a list of likely organizations and contacts. So some of the venues in the region that might seem like likely contenders for responding to the opportunity to operate the Opera House. Developing an RFP catered to that list of contacts that would be specific to the types of operations that they run, that they are familiar with, that would allow then the city to evaluate which of those potential operating partners might be best suited for the venue. Eventually, in number three here on the screen, once a particular entity is narrowed down to establishing an MOU, a memorandum of understanding between that entity and the city, as far as operations, legal logistics, other topics, and the overall relationship that would be held between the city as an entity and the operating party. Once that MOU is in place, it would then set up the correct moment to begin. One complete fundraising and then begin the initial phase of renovation work. And then later down the road, eventually that MOU is something that could transition into a lease agreement between the city and the operating entity running the venue. And so five pretty concrete steps that their report outlines. Web management is also an entity that can be utilized to advise about next steps as well, further beyond these immediate findings of their report. But let me stop there for a moment before going further. This sort of represented the first tier of the study related to the market assessment, and just see if there are any immediate questions about these findings.
So if anybody in the gallery here has any questions at this time, you could just walk up to the podium, just hit the button, and just state your name and address for the record. And also, if you're on Zoom and have any questions, you can just unmute your mic and just state your name, address for the record, and you can ask your question. I'll open it up to the gallery in person first. Is there anybody from the gallery that wishes to ask any questions? If not, how about on Zoom? Okay. If not, we'll continue.
Excellent. Next part of our process was evaluating existing conditions. One component of that was really understanding the available space in the existing building. There's a lot of new programming that will have to go into the building. We need to understand the available space in the building that would be u available for use for reprogramming and reusing existing spaces. I won't go into the chart in detail on the screen, but it tallies all of the existing building spaces and rooms, from the basement level to the street level to below stage orchestra level, both balconies on up, both the net usable square feet, which are the usable square feet from face of wall, right? Interior usable square footage for each room, and as well as the gross square foot footprint, which takes into account the footprint out to the outside face of wall. So we really understand the full footprint of the building. In total, there are about 18,800 net square feet in the building, usable as a square foot amount. And the building overall footprint takes up about 28,000 and change gross square feet. And so those metrics gave us a little bit of understanding of the amount of space available. And while those numbers sound large, there's really not a whole lot in the overall building. It's a tight and small building to work with. Initially, we looked at the existing conditions of the exterior. The city has done great work over the history of the building in upkeep of the exterior work, in recently replacing the roof, rebuilding the cupola, replacement of windows throughout the building's history. And it shows, because much of the condition of the interior isn't showing the extent of degradation that you might expect for a building of the late 1800s. So that is wonderful news and should be applauded. Within the scope of the costs that we are estimating and allowing for, though, we are going to provide an allowance for sort of general maintenance of the exterior. You can see in some of these photos, there's what you would typically see in brick efflorescing from the brick facade. We want to make sure that there's provisions enough within the budget allowances to allow for repointing of brick, general maintenance of the brick facades, and things of that sort. And so, not extensive, but something that would allow for the type of general maintenance that you have been doing throughout the years already. Talking about the exterior a bit further, we evaluated how much space we have on the outside of the building to the property line, both in an original 1971 survey, as well as a more recent survey concluded just last year. And this is a zero lot line building, not surprising in a building of this era built right out to the property line. And so what that means is there's very little space beyond the confines of the brick facades that we can work with for additional uses. And so that the interior space of the building that I summarized a moment ago becomes very key in evaluating what we can repurpose and reuse for the building. On the interior of the building, we've walked multiple times with our team and our consultants. The bottom set of images are from the far basement level of the building, much of which is a dirt floor throughout in various states of condition. You can see here in some of the images the load-bearing brick walls, the foundations that come down through the buildings that are in fairly good condition. There's debris and so forth within the basement that would need to be cleaned out. Low ceiling heights. We're predominantly recommending, as I'll go into in a moment further, that the basement level of the building is used for utility, for new infrastructure, for mechanical, electrical, plumbing needs, and everything, all the new programmatic needs would happen on levels above. In the top row of images are at the street level of the building, the level of the building that would be entered off of Elizabeth Street that houses the prior city chamber, mayor's office, and a variety of other buildings. The load-bearing support for the building comes down through the street level of the building. Much of the demising partitions comprising the rooms at street level, though, are non-load-bearing and are under consideration for reevaluation, reconfiguration for new rooms suiting the new programmatic support for the venue. But you can see here some of the existing condition of paint flaking and repair. There's a good amount of abatement that will likely have to happen as part of the project, hazardous material abatement that we will be allowing for in the costs as well for the renovation work to take place. Moving up into the building and the hallmark spaces of the building for the audience chamber and the stage, on the top left-hand image, what is most striking about the audience chamber is the horseshoe shape of the balcony. It really forms what is an intimate room, excellent sight lines to stage, and is unique to the Sterling. And in all of the work, as you'll see as I continue, the goal is to keep that shaping, keep that horseshoe, keep it hugging the proscenium, and keep an intimate room overall for live events. The top row of images showing the balcony vantage points, including the top upper balcony, even from the foremost of the back row of the upper balcony, there are good sight lines to stage. The back row of images, the bottom row, from the stage itself. And this is an area that we'll talk about further, but one interesting attribute of the 1800s era stage is it's all framed out of wood, something you would not do typically today. And so this gave us, during the study, topics to think about how the stage can be reused, restructured in different ways to support, again, that market need for commercial and live entertainment, popular music, comedy acts, those types of uses. In the front of house spaces, there's a large multi-story stair that starts at street level along Elizabeth Street and carries you up through the multiple layers of the chamber. You can see some of those images here. On the left-hand image, the lobby space outside of the upper balcony, and again on the right-hand side, some of the existing stair, the historic stair and railings that continue up through those areas. We were initially concerned that current building code might cause us to reevaluate or rebuild the historic stairs, We've been able to confirm in our work that by provisions of the existing building code, which is adopted by the state of Connecticut, that much of the existing stair, the railings, can be maintained, which is great news. They'll be re structurally reinforced where there's any degradation or structural deficiencies. Same with the railings to make sure that they're shored up, that they're meeting current code loading for the railings. But that level of detail can be kept in the building, which is fantastic. Moving on to some of our other evaluations from our consultants and our engineers. I won't go into a whole load of detail, but just overall, broad overview. Structurally, this is a brick mass masonry building, meaning the exterior perimeter walls are load bearing, and most of the interior structure is heavy timber and wood framed. Like I mentioned a moment ago with the stage, that wood framing continues out the entire building. The balconies are wood framed. The upper attic that you could see an image on the top right is framed out of large timber wood roof trusses that span the wide audience chamber below. And so part of our evaluation was to understand the condition of that wood. Because the envelope has been kept up so well, there's very little signs of wood rot, wood decay, those types of things on the interior of the building. Most of it can stay. There are areas where we would suggest reinforcing the existing wood structure where we need to meet the capacity and new live loads for the audience, for the orchestra floor, for the balcony floors, for the stage in those areas. But our building code evaluation, which we'll be submitting in more detail in the final report, tells us that we can keep the wood structure by doing one significant thing that I'll come back to in more detail, which is implementing a full fire sprinkler system in the building where there has not been one. And so a combination of things, but in addition, that supplemented by the fire sprinkler will allow us to keep much of the wood structure. Which is the least likely obstructionist way of dealing with the existing structure, keeping the wood, not having to replace it as much with new steel and other types of materials that would be disruptive to the existing building. Our mechanical, electrical, plumbing teams have also evaluated existing systems. There's not a whole lot there. So their work in some ways was pretty straightforward to say this really needs to be all new systems. Mechanically speaking, we are proposing, and which I'll describe more, that the building is forced air treated and conditioned where it has not been previously. There's no new humidity levels being brought into the building, but essentially all new mechanical equipment. There's been a host on the electrical side of a variety of wiring and other types of systems and panels through the building's history, knob and tube to more recent Romex MC cable. All of that has to come out, new panels, new infrastructure, new electrical service to the building, new transformer to support the level and capacity of the venue taking the stage. So not only the life safety systems, but the performance systems, the lighting, all of those things. Plumbing and fire protection also new. As I'll go through in the floor plans in a moment, we're suggesting areas of new restrooms, both audience focused as well as back of house. There'll need to be new plumbing for those components, as well as sprinkler and fire protection, where there is none currently. So that'll all be all new as well. On the acoustics side, we have a great condition. Again, that load-bearing condition of the brick perimeter offers a great acoustic condition for the building as far as separating outside noise from coming to the interior. There are aspects where we have seen interior finishes deteriorate or completely detach from the perimeter brick wall, such as down here in the top right below the balcony, where some of those surfaces would need to be re-implemented to make sure there's a uniform acoustic to the interior. But we're dealing with the bones of great acoustics within the existing building to work with. It should be noted, though, that the current state of the building is not reflective of what once it had been in its prior or original form and level of acoustic that it had back in its heyday. And so there's a host of acoustic recommendations that we'll also talk about in a moment to improve the building. I'll touch a bit on some of the historic criteria that we're talking about, including evaluation for in the study to make sure that you are set up correctly for tax credit eligibility if it is so chosen to go that route. We've been evaluating all of the building codes that the building will fall subject to under the 2022 Connecticut State Building Code. It adopts, among others, the International Existing Building Code. And by the International Existing Building Code, not surprising, the definition of the Sterling meets the historic meets the definition of a historic building, and it gives us therefore the ability to meet code acceptable exceptions to the existing building code under that purview of being an historic building. One of those criteria is being listed on the National Register, which we all know it is. But there's key principles there that we are evaluating, making sure that the recommendations we put forth allow that possibility. Requirements that the Secretary of the Interior requires for renovations, preservation of character. I mentioned a moment ago the idea of keeping railings, keeping the stairs, keeping much of the interior decor and ornament. Authenticity, that the materials that go back are of a similar like and kind to what would have been done in the original construction to the extent feasible, and compatible additions. This is a key component because we are, as part of our recommendations, proposing that there is a small addition to the building to address accessibility, which I'll come to in a further slide. If it is determined that federal tax funding would be pursued, there's three phases of work that would happen under the true building and design project that would happen in future work. Phase one evaluation, something maybe a little more involved than the study that we will put forth at the end of this process, that documents the significance of the project applying for permit and explains the vision for the renovation. So this study will outline much of that. At the outset of any building, true building design project, that probably wants to be reevaluated, making sure that all of the initial assumptions done as part of this study are still accurate and reflect the way forward. Phase two, design, providing a description for the rehabilitation and outlining the plan to restore the building. These are really the design drawings, the construction drawings that would happen later in the process of the design and building project. But those being would be submitted both to the State Historic Preservation Office as well as the National Park Service as part of that process. And then the last, once the work is complete, certifying the work, making sure that the work done meets all the criteria that was submitted under review of the State Historic Preservation Office and the National Park Service. For tax credit eligibility, there are a variety of aspects I'll go into at a high level here, but as part of the report, we're evaluating each of them and summarizing the Sterling Opera House's compliance with this criteria again, so it gives you the flexibility as you move forward to pursue tax credit potential if desired. Again, it needs to be a national listed on the National Register, which we are. The project needs to meet what's called a substantial rehabilitation test, which evaluates the construction cost of the renovation relative to the existing property value. We'll be examining that further, but we do believe we meet those criteria. We need to meet the Secretary of the Interior's standards for rehabilitation, which I'll elaborate on in a moment. There's about 10 or so points that they put forth. And then after the rehabilitation, the historic building needs to be depreciable, meaning it can't be a single-family home residence. It needs to be a commercial property earning income, which this clearly would fall into when you're opening the venue back up. On the screen are those 10 requirements from the Secretary of the Interior. At a high level, the property should be used for its original historic purpose, a performing arts venue. It'll continue to be used as so. The historic character of the property shall be retained and preserved. We are trying to be very sensitive in the recommendations that we put forth. We think building code also permits a lot of the ability to preserve the original historic character, which is fantastic. Each property recognizes a physical record of its time and place. Changes are not to create a false sense of history. So things that are new to the building should be legible as new additions. It should not try to create false historic details where they did not exist previously. And there's a host of other topics here. Chemical and physical treatments shouldn't sandblast the building. We would not propose to do so. And new additions, we want to make sure that any new addition to the building is sensitive to the original building, that we're not overwhelming the historic facade, the mass of the building and size, which I'll come back to describe some of the recommendations in a moment. Let me stop there again after that summary of findings and just see if there are any questions about the historic criteria and things that we're continuing to outline and provide within the study.
Just state your name and address for the record, Gary, please. You could walk right up there. Yep, just hit that button. A green light will go on.
Gary Collins, 273 Derby Avenue. Pardon my voice, I'm a little hoarse. What type of wood was used primarily to build the structure?
It's a variety of wood. A lot of it is fir. It's a variety of different sizes as well. And so, one of the criteria for current building code under heavy timber is that the timber sizes meet certain dimensional criteria. We're beyond that. We have sizes that are larger, say, in some of the roof truss members and up above the trusses that span the audience chamber, to smaller wood joists of maybe 3 inches wide by 13 inches tall.
Well, they did have a lot of fir around here at the time. Did they choose the fir because it was economical, or was it used for structural or acoustic reasons?
It was largely used for structural capacity. Fir is also continues to be used as a material within heavy timber construction to this day, glue laminated timber, LVL, mass timber. So
Okay.
likely the structural capacity of the wood.
The part of the wood which comes out here, in other words, the structure is here, the acoustic portion is here. Was there any layers of, say, maple or birch used? Does anybody know the type of wood that was used for acoustic purposes, or was it strictly fir?
Yeah, so there was no exposed timber. The timber was there structurally, and then it was sheathed or coated with
Plaster.
plaster.
Plaster?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to see what the acoustic.
Wire, lath, first and then
Yeah, I wanted to
plaster.
see what the acoustic element was because it was built in the late 1800s, 1800s. And they knew a lot about what they were doing with the acoustics of wood. So if it's mostly fir and plaster, and if it sounds good, fine. But I would have recommended maple or birch. So I was just curious about that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
If there's anyone on online or Zoom that wishes to ask any questions at this time on this last section, you could just unmute your mic and state your name and address for the record. You can do that now.
Hi, Matt Wielander. I live in Orange. Just a logistical question. Is it possible, are you going to give us a copy of this presentation tonight that we
Yes,
can
we'll be
review?
sharing the slideshow. We'll probably issue it through Gino, who can
Perfect.
disperse it accordingly.
Thank you.
Yeah, we could email it to you, Matt.
That'd be great.
Are there any other questions, either in the gallery or online? Okay, if not, we'll keep going. Go ahead, Evan. Thank you.
Excellent. Just as we evaluated the existing building square footage, we and our team evaluated what new space would need to go back into the building to best support the new function for the building. This ran the gamut of space types from the audience chamber and public spaces of the building to performer support areas like dressing rooms to production support areas like AV rooms and rack rooms and the sort, all the way to building utility and spaces of that nature. And so we are proposing, as I alluded to, that there would be the potential for an accessible addition containing an elevator. And so the chart that's on the screen tracks not only the square footage within the confines of the existing building, but also that square footage that would be part of the elevator addition from basement level all the way through the upper levels of the building, the below stage support areas, the orchestra level, the balcony levels, and the attic level of the building. Here, within the confines of the existing building, finding new space where space was less efficiently used, we find 30,000 gross square feet. So, where the original building, as I mentioned a moment ago, has about 28 and change gross square feet, we're trying to make better use of the interior of the building, and therefore the gross number has risen. Net usable square feet from the original 18, we're again trying to, we're hitting about 20 or so. So there's about 2,000 additional usable square feet that are being added to the interior of the building that I'll summarize when we go through the floor plans. The addition is small in comparison, 1,500 square feet gross footprint, about 810 square feet net, which is really just attributable to an elevator and the access ways to that elevator. Let me come up with this image, which is a site plan within the vicinity of the Sterling. I'll zoom in a moment to specific areas, but you can see where my cursor is in the white footprint, the existing Sterling building, the courthouse to the bottom left, and the adjacent properties off to the right-hand side. What we are trying to do in all of this is preserve circulation ways around both sides of the building to the neighboring properties. As I mentioned a moment ago, with the site survey, we are a landlocked building out to the brick facades that are right at the property line. And so any exterior space that might be needed for this renovation is looking beyond the property line at potential easement conditions and opportunities. What we are summarizing on the screen is the sort of worst case extent of exterior space that might be needed beyond the confines of the immediate property line. Between the left-hand line in the red dash dot pattern where my cursor is running to the one immediately to the right-hand side. And this is attributable to a new accessible entry, a proposed addition with elevator that would accommodate accessibility in a better way than the existing building does, which it doesn't. Potential for loading and loading access from the opposite street, and exterior mechanical and transformer. We're trying to keep some of the noise-producing equipment outside of the sensitive areas of the theater so we don't have to address them acoustically as sensitively. Let me zoom in on this screen, if it will let me, to summarize some of those spaces from top to bottom. Again, Elizabeth Street is at the top of the page, right where my cursor is in the purple hatched color, a new accessible ramp and entry into what would be the public lobby at street level. Immediately behind that, a new elevator addition in this zone in the paler orange color. We are trying to implement a single elevator to prevent overspending of what could be multiple elevators in multiple locations throughout the building and have one that serves dual purpose, both front of house function as well as back of house. And so its positioning has been very strategic to get it to be able to load the back of house and production needs from the street, as well as still be close enough to the front of house functions that it can serve audience levels in the building. That begins to set up the possibility for a loading platform off of the backside of the building and potential for a single loading drive off of the street with adjusted curb cut for capacity for a semi tractor trailer, box trucks, other types of vans that could all take use of that single platform. On the left-hand side of that area, we're illustrating again the worst case for ground footprint needed for mechanical and electrical needs. In the darker green color, the footprint of what would be needed for outside condenser units, meaning some of the smaller spaces in the building we're proposing would be conditioned via heat pumps and split units where the condensers are on the outside of the building and we're merely running hot and cold water lines to the units on the interior. The fans, all of that noise-producing equipment would be located in this area. There's also a possibility that this equipment could live on the roof of the addition, which would thereby free up some of the ground space immediately in this area. So there is that possibility. For the sake of this discussion, we're illustrating the worst-case scenario.
Correct. Yeah. So we have, if you will, plan B for some of these things. But the inside and the way the opera house was originally built, it wasn't heated, it wasn't cooled, it was done by natural ventilation. So there was no place to put HVAC, cooling compressors and whatnot. So what we did was we took everything and kind of put it in its spot on the ground for the worst case scenario so that we would have a full layout and a full footprint. Because obviously, as Evan said before, we're kind of landlocked on our footprint. So we wanted to have a worst case scenario going into it. So this is where we're at. This is would be the backside on Olivia Street by the post office.
And in a similar fashion to the mechanical equipment, there would be a new outdoor transformer, and all of those have certain clearances around the equipment that would need to be provided. So again, showing the worst case for ground footprint that might be needed to support the building. Moving through the floor plan diagrams that we've generated it in draft form, I'll walk up through the building from the basement level, illustrating some of the adjustments to the building. In the basement level, again, we're repurposing this primarily as MEP mechanical infrastructure. So we may slab over some of the dirt floors to make them equipment ready, install the new equipment, and that's really all that would be handled down at this basement level, with the exception of some new foundation work for a few different elements. Off to the side of the building, which I'll zoom into here, foundations for what would be the new elevator addition. And immediately below the existing stage footprint for two new stair emergency exit stairs that would be required to exit the audiences from the upper levels of the building. So outside of that work, there's not a whole lot of work envisioned down at the basement level. The area immediately below the stage is otherwise unexcavated. Moving up to street level, there are a variety of things happening at street level. It takes on both a front of house use for audience purposes, as well as back of house use for production and performer support. We have two predominant entries, preserving the main entry off of Elizabeth Street, where shown here, and a new accessible entrance immediately around the corner, off of the side of the building. And close in vicinity to the new elevator addition. We're proposing that the existing doors at the corner tower and cupola component of the building, the walls and doors remain, but they no longer be used for the predominant entry. The walls and doors are right immediately up against what are steep stairs off of the street. They're not code compliant. We don't propose that they be reused as the main entry to the building, but can remain, again, to retain the historic elements of the facade. On the floor, within the yellow zones, we're proposing there be a street level lobby area immediately off of the street. In the pink zones, public restroom facilities serving the lobby function. And a bit differently from the current building, where the stairs immediately accessed from those front doors, the stair would be opened up a bit from the lobby, really celebrating its presence at the street level of the building. The existing stair remains, the railing remains, being able to see that historic character down at the first level of the building. The elevator would be accessed from the interior, and essentially right where my cursor is would be the demising separation between the front of house access and all of the backstage support. In the green zones, these are green rooms and dressing rooms for performers. In the blue zones, production support areas for house technical director, visiting company manager's office, backstage storage, tool and AV rooms, other production support areas. You can see here again that split use for the elevator, back of house loading, as well as front of house access. Moving up to the next level, one of the interesting attributes is that the main level of the venue itself is up in the air. It's two stories off of the street. This allows for, in fact, additional area immediately below the stage between street level and the stage itself. That's currently used or currently was originally designed as some supporting dressing rooms. We're proposing it still be used in that fashion, that there are additional dressing rooms up off of street level, directly below the stage, in proximity to stage for quick changes and other types of things that would have to happen for those types of events. The elevator also serves that back of house zone immediately below the stage. And you can see here a little better indication of those new stairs continuing up from the level below to help exit the levels above. Up at the main level of the venue itself, the orchestra level, in the yellow zone are all of the existing historic stairs and lobby areas that get us up to this level. In the pink area is the main floor of the chamber itself. We're proposing a few different things. There are two proposals for side access ramps from the rear of the house to the stage and to the new exit stairs at the back of the stage that provides better wheelchair access between those areas for exiting. One of the key findings coming out of the market needs assessment was really to find opportunity for revenue generation wherever possible, and that food and beverage is a significant component to the entertainment functions that would come into the building. And so we're identifying a few different locations at each of the seating levels that could be used as modest concessions outposts here in the far corners of the room, at the house left and house right rear of the house, and the downhouse, house left and house right corners closer to stage that would offer those opportunities. There will be additional performance equipment, theater dimming, lighting, rigging, and such that come into the building, and the control for those components needs to be provided for. There's opportunity for a new control booth at the rear of the house below the balcony to allow for sound and lighting control in this blue zone. For the general approach for exiting the balconies and to meet code required travel distances between the seating areas and getting folks to an exit, and knowing that we're in a wood-framed building of this particular construction type, is what really led us to implement the idea of two exit stairs behind the stage. And so, again, these side access ways on the orchestra level, and you'll see in the upper balcony levels above this, provide that type of circulation for audience members to get safely to different points of exit from the audience chamber and behind the stage. You'll see those stairs and the rear rooms that they offer. In this case, they offer the opportunity for piano storage directly behind stage. Other functions that I'll summarize up above does in fact shorten the stage depth from its current footprint, which I'll talk about in a moment. But because of the market assessment and the proposed use for the building, that's the most likely use case, we believe we have the opportunity to shorten the depth a bit, as well as come in on the sides a bit to allow that type of circulation and space need. So I'll come back to that topic in a moment because we did, as part of this process, evaluate the stage function, the types of things that would happen on stage, and its configuration. In its current configuration, the stage by code we're recommending is not considered a stage, but in fact a performance platform, which thereby relaxes some of the complexity required for the proscenium wall. That would be a life safety device that separates the stage from the audience. You saw in some of the earlier images, it's entirely wood framed. It's not fireproofed in any way, shape, or form. Under this configuration, we would not need to do that. Its construction could remain. And again, I'll come back to that topic in a moment. But to come up to some of the upper levels of the seating, this is the first balcony, a similar approach taken to the seating area. We're preserving the stairs, the lobby access, At the rear of the balcony could be opportunities for food and beverage concessions, side access way to the exiting. So we would have really dispersal of the exiting from the front of house lobby side through the side access ways to the rear stairs. Again, our accessible elevator comes up to the first balcony level. We would not propose that the elevator come any higher than the first balcony. We believe we can get wheelchair dispersion between the orchestra level and the first balcony. This also allows us to keep the height of the addition below the roof, the eaves of the existing historic roof, which is important from a building massing standpoint. We want to make sure that the addition is very modest and in no way overpowers the existing building.
So, the addition for the stairway, the service elevator plus the elevator for attendees is going to be in between the two buildings. And what we didn't want to do was go up so high that if you're coming up Elizabeth Street, that you would see it sticking up above the roof line. So, Evan and the team came up with the idea to go up a certain height so it would be below the or just about at the gutter line, and the building to if you're coming up Elizabeth Street, that first building there, that old SNET building, I think it was, you won't be able to see it at all. So we're trying to kill a couple birds with one stone there. But we also didn't want to make it go up so high that it took away from the cupola, the roof line, and whatnot. So that's why the team came up with this kind of idea and structure to go along with it. So I just wanted to let everybody know.
And moving up to the second balcony, again, a similar strategy here as far as the configuration of the seating opportunities for food and beverage concessions at the rear of the balcony. Something different here than existing new restroom facilities. And so I pointed out a moment ago, new public restrooms at street level, which is a level below the orchestra level of the building. By code, we're allowed to have that one level of vertical separation between the area served by the restrooms and where the restrooms are located proper. The street level restrooms would therefore serve both the street level of the building as well as the first level of the audience chamber. In the second, or the first balcony, rather, there's really very little footprint and no great space to include restrooms. We would be coming into the chamber, reducing footprint, and doing things that would be too invasive to the building. And so here we're proposing that the next area of restrooms happens at the second balcony, in fact, and would serve both the second balcony and the first balcony for restroom facilities. But in a similar fashion, allowing for exiting both back out the front of the building through the yellow zones at the front along Elizabeth Street and new side arms to the balcony, connecting to side access ways that would exit out the back of the building. Here again, allowing additional space for production needs, lighting, and AV racks and equipment that would be needed to support the goings on stage. The attic level of the building, one level up, really would be focused on air handling. So I mentioned that most of the equipment would be external and small units, heat pumps and splits that would serve smaller spaces in the street level and other areas of the building. We need to condition the audience chamber itself. And that piece of equipment is sizable. It's not something that can live outside easily, given the site constraints. It's not something that can easily live on the interior of the building, given acoustic concerns and space needs. And so this proposition locates an air handler at the top of the stage house. It locates it in proximity to what would be the two new stair cores. Given that that structure will be reconstructed for the stairs, it gives us good bearing location for where we could then support the new air handling equipment and then duct and serve overhead of the audience chamber through the open attic space, thereby not disrupting the historic interior of the plaster ceiling, plaster walls, and the interior of the chamber, which with major duct runs, duct works, and shafts and of that sort. So in cross section of the building, just a summary again of really all of the topics that I just described for the overall building layout, utility and mechanical function in the basement, the street level floor.
So I just want to mention, so this view that everyone sees on their screens right now or here in the audience is a view from the side looking in. And you'll see there where the pink is, that'll be the first balcony, second balcony, so forth and so on. So I just want to let everyone know what they're looking at. You would be looking in from the side view of the building.
That's exactly right. So before we were looking at the horizontal layout of each floor, here we're cutting vertically through all levels of the building that I just reviewed in the floor plans. Utility level down below in the basement, which is where my cursor is. The next level up at street level, both front of house function and production needs. The chamber of the building, again, doesn't start until a full story above street level. And so again, emphasizing the need to have true good elevator access for the audience members. We're proposing that the major superstructure of the balcony support remains, is reinforced, and new seating tiers could be built up off of the existing reinforced structure. Again, not trying to remove wood structure where there's good bearing capacity. We would reinforce it to meet new live load requirements for the audience and build new seating tiers where we might be able to respace the tiers and seating for additional audience comfort while keeping all of the historic aesthetics to the balcony. The balcony rail is also worth mentioning. It's one of the predominant ornamental features in the room when you walk into the space. That we want to keep as well, and code will allow us to keep the existing metal balcony rail, both at the first and second balconies. I want to come to the next few slides to talk about evaluation of the stage environment and some of the recommendations we're putting forth for the stage, or rather platform, as I summarized, based on the outcome of the market need and making sure that we're making the platform environment compatible with what will take the stage and supporting that use. Not overbuilding, not underbuilding, making sure we're planning for the future well. First on the screen is a few diagrams of the existing stage. You can see on the left-hand side a view towards the audience, towards the back side of the proscenium wall in the downstage direction. The proscenium wall itself is all wood, the side galleries, the upper grid. In the center of the screen is a three-dimensional view of just the stage house itself, looking in the dashed line of the proscenium opening, and in blue, the upper galleries and wood grid level itself. And so just to give everyone a reference point, the overall stage has a playing area behind the proscenium of about 28 feet wide, which is the proscenium opening width, by 30 feet deep. Wings of, again, that same 30-foot depth and 17 feet on both sides of the proscenium opening. The height to the grid is about 38 feet from the stage deck. And so some evaluation of the existing stage footprint to give us parameters. While web management was undertaking the market need, we were also evaluating what it would take to reconfigure the stage, both within a more extensive steel gridiron and rigging system, as well as more modest needs for the platform and other configurations. On the screen are a few diagrams that we undertook during that assessment for a new gridiron. We can't come back and reuse the wood structure for the grid. It would have to be all new steel. And so what's shown on the screen are in green, new gallery levels out of steel, new gridiron, again out of steel, and the extent of structure that would have to come down through the building along the proscenium line to support all of that structure. While we do have good brick-bearing walls around the sides and backside of the stage, the proscenium wall itself in this area is not of the capacity to support the rigging needs that would be needed for a full gridiron and side galleries. And so this gave us a little bit of pause while the market assessment was still being conducted. So this is one criteria of structurally supporting the capacity of a new gridiron. The other component to this is what code requires and the extent of code requirements that go along with the stage environment being a true stage of over 1,000 square feet, which the current stage is, of over 50 feet tall, which we're right at 50 feet. And it requires, in fact, a full 2-hour rated proscenium wall shown here on the screen in blue from the foundations to the roof. Again, as a means of protecting the stage. If there's a ha the stage is deemed a higher hazard level than the audience to prevent fire and smoke events from spreading into the audience, it needs that rated wall assembly. In addition to the wall, we would have a fire curtain that again protects the proscenium opening from a similar perspective, and we would need smoke exhaust of the stagehouse itself because of the height and the likelihood of smoke buildup. So these were all things that we were trying to evaluate. Were the recommendations going to head to this extreme, or was there something in the middle ground that we might be able to right size for the specific market so that we're not suggesting expenditure beyond what you would likely get return on investment for the capital improvements to the building? And so I'll pull up our next slide, which is a compilation of things, and I'll blow up maybe the left-hand side first, which is again looking at the floor plan in horizontal arrangement, the proposed stage or platform playing area in red, the two
So,
side wings.
excuse me one second, Evan. So, for anybody that's following along, either at home or here in the gallery, this would be a top view of you looking down, from a drone or from the, top down, like a Google image of the stage area itself. So, I just want to, let people know what they're looking at.
As we went through in the floor plans a moment ago, in orange, the two new stair towers for emergency exiting the upper levels of the building, the side access ways on both sides of the red playing zone, some storage area behind stage that offers, but it essentially means that the predominant playing area of the platform is again this red zone, but slightly shortened in the back and the side to side because of that circulation and emergency exiting. We think because of that the platform can be in its shortened depth 20 feet from the existing 30. It retains the 28 foot wide proscenium width, the same proscenium opening height at 23 foot 4. That size playing area is suitable for the type of commercial entertainment, live popular music, comedy, those types of events that might come into the building and provide a ticketed use for the building. What this then offers opportunity for, again, is the new stair towers shown in this three-dimensional view of the stagehouse in orange. In the darker blue color, a likely location for the new air handling equipment up above the stage to be supported in and around and close to the stairs structurally. We get some efficiency out of that. In the lighter blue color, this would be a lighter weight structure, but something that you could still rig modestly from to allow for lighting, to allow for sound needs. The performances that take the platform will still need modest accommodation for those theatrical functions. And so there'll still be the ability to have a grid, albeit not to the extent shown in the previous slide in the green areas to serve again sound and lighting needs. Along this with this, I won't go into this in a whole lot of detail, but technical diagrams that we're producing that will be included in the study to study occupancy of the building and exiting strategy. We've done this through all of the floor levels of the building for our own calculations and to make sure that we're right sizing programmatic components that are being made part of the recommendations. This assesses about 770 total occupants for the building overall, amongst all of the floor levels, from basement through the second balcony. Along with it, extent of what would be removed from the building to allow these types of adjustments to happen. I'll go through this quickly, just zooming in at basement level. We're really not removing anything. We're keeping all of the load-bearing structure, bearing walls, and so forth, and working infrastructure around those areas. As we go up to street level, This again is a bird's eye view looking down towards street level, the level right off of Elizabeth Street. This is where, in the dashed lines, we would be removing some of the interior partitions that are non-load-bearing to allow for new room layouts that are suitable sized for production areas, dressing rooms, and support areas, as well as new lobby function down at street level. This also imagines opening up two areas of load-bearing wall to allow for some greater opening of the lobby function in the street level zone. In the area immediately below stage, there are some modest existing partitions that will be reconfigured for dressing rooms. At the orchestra level itself, within the chamber, not much of any demolition work really would be additive to what's there. On stage, there are some existing stairs that go down to the below stage areas and that connect to the balconies. These would be rethought. These would come out as part of the recommended removals from the building. And you can see here in the red diagonal hatched areas, the zones for the new stairs. And within both balcony areas, again, reimagining the tiers shown in the dashed line. So just at a global view, some of the large things that might come out of the building to allow for the reconfiguration. As part of our study work, again, I'll be global in this overview, but we've been assessing existing assemblies. In blue in these diagrams, we have load-bearing walls, same as the red. There's existing plaster assemblies, but what this has allowed us to do is take a closer look and examination of different assembly types that will be summarized as part of the report. Existing load-bearing masonry walls that are in some instances faced with plaster on the interior, some that are missing it. We're three layers of brick masonry thick in most instances, except where we're deepened in section to support structurally the building beams and such above on upper floors. There's a lot of existing plaster assemblies on wood lath. We're proposing some new assemblies that would come into the building to make way for those new rooms, to make way for the addition in the instance of the new stair cores, a concrete block perimeter that would allow fire separation and safety of those stairs. But we're exposed to the historic interior of the room, plaster on metal lath, but lime plaster and such that would match the material of the existing. On interior non-load-bearing walls, where we might have new walls separating recreated rooms on the interior, a similar approach to implementing plaster in that instance. And we do have the perimeter of the new addition, which needs to be fire rated, potentially out of a brick masonry wall with, again, a plaster interior. So these assemblies are summarized, will be summarized as part of the report. And in a similar fashion, we're doing the same for the horizontal assemblies of the floors and ceilings. I'll blow up this image, which describes in a little better concept the structural approach to the balconies. The slope diagonal main raker beams of the balconies we're proposing remains. All of the secondary construction shown in the dashed lines would come out, potentially to allow for new tiers that respace the seating. We have about 2'8" in row-to-row depth with the existing tiers. We really knock your knees against the seats in front of you if you're sitting there. There's potential to expand that to about 3 foot row-to-row. Of course, it's a delicate balance because that means loss potentially of seating capacity. And so that was part of what we evaluated with our seat count. Coming to our next topic, we've evaluated different options for seating capacity in the room. Really, it's a delicate balance. The study won't make a concrete conclusion on what the exact seat count should be. This is something that really should be discussed further into the future, and certainly with the operator entity on board to best understand ticketing capacity of the audience and revenue and the business model for operating the venue. But there are a few different options of different capacities here. At the outset, I mentioned a gap that the market assessment found between 300 or so to 1,200 or so seats. So we're falling in that mid-range, which we think is a good range to be given competitor venues in the region. Option one that I'll come to. These are three levels of the building: the orchestra on the left-hand side, balcony one in the middle, balcony two on the far right-hand side. In option one, we have 613 seats total by doing a few different things. On the orchestra level, the far left-hand side, there's new seating implemented in what's called a continental seating style, meaning the row length of the seats is quite extensive side to side, and we have audience access aisles at the far perimeter of the seating dish. This has the disadvantage of longer distances to your seat from the sides, but is more space efficient as far as getting seat count into the orchestral level. We have 235 seats in this configuration on the far left-hand side. In the upper balconies, balcony one and balcony two, we wanted to test the theory of keeping the 2'8" tier spacing row to row to see what seat capacity that would give us at the upper end of these options. In balcony one, that configuration would yield about 214 seats, balcony two, 164. So option one is the larger of the options as far as seating capacity. Option two rethinks the orchestra level on the left-hand side to introduce two intermediate aisles. We don't typically recommend a center aisle. These are good seats to have center orchestra, so we typically have intermediate aisles and therefore two on both sides. Less space efficient, so we lose some seats, but shorter row length and shorter distance to your seat. 191 seats in this option, where we had 235 in the previous. This keeps balcony one and balcony two the same existing tier depth to keep the seat count high within the balconies. So here in this configuration, 569 seats. And then moving to a third option, back to continental seating at the orchestra level, and re-tiering balcony one, balcony two to 3 foot depths. We lose some seats. We lose one fewer row in both balconies for 179 in the first balcony and 136 in balcony two. 550 seats in this configuration. So there are different permutations of these options, but we wanted to give a good array of what's possible within the existing room as far as capacity. And it's always a delicate balance and trade-off between audience comfort, row-to-row depth, what the right dialed-in seating capacity for the venue will be from a ticket and revenue-generating standpoint. On the acoustic side, some thoughts about recommended improvements to the building. As I said at the outset, the existing brick perimeter wall is great for isolating noise from the street. Windows were more recently replaced. Upon our visits to the building, Elizabeth Street is fairly quiet. There's less concern about immediate noise infiltration from the exterior to the chamber. There may be the one-off event where there would be emergency vehicles passing, fire trucks, ambulances, what have you. You may hear those on the interior of the building, but they're not the frequent occasion, the rarity. They may be slightly disruptive, but it's a nature of the building being historic and there being a lot of really wood in the exterior envelope. So isolation from the exterior, less a concern. What should be pointed out is there could be instances of noise from the venue spreading outward beyond the building, depending on, again, the use. In amplified events such as rock performances and other popular music, where there's sound amplification and a good amount of bass frequencies, that sound could emanate beyond the building and would need to be discussed further with neighbors and so forth as far as disrupting the immediate area. So a topic that should be continued to be evaluated as moving forward. There are different types of noise evaluation: HVAC noise, fan noise. We're trying to keep most of the equipment, as I mentioned, outside of the building for this purpose, and just address the single air handler that would function to heat and cool the chamber itself above the stage. This would have to be treated for vibration separation from the stage, so we don't get vibration and noise coming down through the structure onto stage or in the chamber. And then the room acoustics itself. There's two different approaches to how sound absorption and sound deadening or the reverberance can be treated. Natural acoustic of the room, the built-in fixed acoustic of the room, or variable acoustics, which uses a variety of different systems, different options for doing so, but components that can come in or come out of the room to literally vary and change how live and reverberant or how dead and absorbent the room would be. This needs, again, is a topic that would need to be evaluated with the operator, the type of use coming in for the building, and how frequent there would be heavily amplified type of performance. In a fixed room acoustic approach, there might be two different ways of doing so. One that is geared for modest amplification, and so spoken word, comedy acts, and that type of thing, if those are the predominant events. If there might be planned more music, popular music, rock events, something that is a more dead, fixed natural acoustic as the built-in state of the room. That's the more cost-effective approach, is to build in how the room sounds. There could be ways for building in a variable approach with different systems and motorized equipment. I won't go into the structure in details, but we talked a little bit about the stagehouse structure. We've evaluated the structure below the orchestra, which is really the groundwork for what supports the balcony areas above. You can see the diagram on the right-hand side that shows in red two predominant angled beams that support columns above and therefore the balconies above. These are in good condition predominantly, but again, will need to be evaluated further and likely reinforced to support the new live loads for the levels above. As I mentioned a moment ago, all new mechanical equipment in the building. This goes into more detail about the types of equipment, the types of capacities. Largely smaller equipment for most of the building, the single large air handler for the stage above. There would be all new electrical equipment, including the new transformer outdoor to bring new service to the building for the capacity envisioned for the performance systems and the base illumination and life safety systems to the building, as well as plumbing to serve the entire building, new restroom areas. I should say these are just representative images. They're not reflective of exactly what would be going into the building. New fire sprinkler, as I mentioned earlier. This involves new standpipes, vertical pipes that would be installed within the building, within the new stairs, within the corners of the platform, to allow horizontal dispersion of sprinkler heads and piping throughout various areas of the building, to be very delicately installed within attic areas and so forth, to be the least disruptive to the historic fabric of the building. So that was a lot, but let me, in totality, review of the significant amount of scope that's being considered for the building. If done in one phase, there could be a significant upfront capital cost involved in doing so. And so our team is evaluating the ability to phase some of the work. One of the most important things coming out of the market assessment was, how do we spend the least money possible to reopen doors and get the building full of people again? And so as we've begun looking at different areas of the building, different scope, and different potential phases, we've broken this up into a few different areas. We're still evaluating the appropriateness and whether each of these would be distinct phases or at least identified as separate scopes of work. In orange, obviously, the audience areas of the chamber and the performance platform area of the stage would need to happen in the first phase of work to bring people back in, to bring people on an activity onto stage. There likely would need to be some modest accommodation for backstage support, dressing room, performer support area. Shown in blue, immediately below the stage, is that area of dressing rooms that would be proposed. That could happen in tandem with the initial phase. It could potentially break out and happen in a subsequent phase. The street level of the building gives us a unique opportunity. It's almost its own contained area of the building that could be thought about as a future phase itself. We're proposing at least looking at it and assessing that as a potential separate phase. And then the exterior work, the loading to the building, doing the minimal amount of work day one to get the equipment in, if we have exterior equipment, to get access and egress from the building, but then leave the loading drive, leave the dock, leave some of those components potentially to a future phase. As we move up through the building, on the street level, as I mentioned a moment ago, in orange, are all of the front of house functions related to audience and emergency egress that could happen in the first phase. The back of house areas, production support, other build out could potentially be shelled out on day one and allow for future build out to happen in the future. along this area, there would need to be in phase one connective artery between that front of house area and exiting through the stairs at the backside of the building. Our below stage area that I mentioned could be yet a separate future phase while preserving again phase one in orange, the elevator addition for accessible access to audience areas, and again the stairs that would have to come in to provide exiting of the upper levels. And then upwards from there, the orchestra level, the balcony levels, again, part of that initial phase. So in this, the initial phase still likely is the largest scope of work, is the largest undertaking, but we're trying to find ways to define a right-sized phase one that might be a little more minimal in upfront capital costs day one. And a similar approach to the exterior, the electrical transformer would be something that has to happen day one to bring new electrical capacity into the full building. The equipment for condensers and that type of mechanical equipment at large could be phased two because it's all independent small equipment. It could be added over time as those spaces come online in future phases. We would build out the pad day one to allow for the future equipment to be installed. And in the green color, again, thinking about whether the loading, drive, and platform happens day one as part of the initial work or a future phase. So some thoughts about phasing. We don't have numbers to share with you today. We are working through with our cost estimators, Cost Plus, another firm that focuses on performing arts expertise with cost estimating. But what I do want to share is a overall structure of how we're thinking about the estimate. What we want to leave you with at the end of the study process is not just the construction cost, but thinking about the totality, the total project cost involved. And in doing that, it evaluates not only what are called the hard construction costs, the trade construction costs of what it takes to physically build the building, but all the add-on soft costs on top of that. If you think about turning the building upside down, shaking it, and everything that falls out, all of the loose furnishings, all of the loose components fall within that soft cost category. Equipment, microphones, speakers that plug in, chairs and furniture, those types of things. In addition to that, professional fees, design fees, abatement, permitting, allowances for miscellaneous and legal costs that allow, in totality, us to come to a bottom line at the bottom of this type of matrix and define the total all-in cost, capital cost of what it would take to do each segment of work. So, from top to bottom of the chart, thinking about the hard costs, soft costs. From left to right, thinking about the phasing that I mentioned a moment ago. So, giving a menu of options within the costing structure of what each phase would cost from left to right, so you can better evaluate, do we do just phase one at the outset? Do we need to rethink making phase one more modest than the initial projections? Is there a way of grouping this in a different way than this initially suggests? We're trying to give you the tools to evaluate doing so. The cost information will also be escalated. It'll carry escalation into the future. And break that out separately so that you have the ability to escalate costs as it's better determined when the actual construction renovation process would happen, as well as different contingencies that would be baked into the work for construction contingencies, owner contingencies, design contingencies that are typical for this type of work. So, an overall structure of how the cost estimate will be structured. A very overall arching outline of the study document that we're producing, following much of the same progression that we went through in the presentation tonight. Summary information and history over at the outset, summary of our process, existing building assessment, the market needs assessment, the proposed alterations that we've went through. We'll be including much of the visuals and diagrams that we've shared on the screen in refined and final form. The overall building arrangement for the chamber and audience areas, accessibility recommendations as we reviewed, theatrical and performance alterations. As part of the cost estimation, Stages Consultants is also putting together a recommended budget for theatrical and AV equipment that will be part of that budgeting. The cost estimate will be obviously included in the report. The project phasing and sequencing, and overall recommendations and conclusions, and then accessory appendices. So an overall outline of the study document yet to come that we should have a final version of in about a month's time. And then we want to leave tonight with just some visuals. These are still very conceptual, but to give you some idea of the transformation of the room itself, on the left-hand side, you can see in black and white an existing view from the first balcony of the chamber looking back into the room. On the right-hand side, with the potential renovations and a comedian taking the stage in this format, you can see some of the provisions for performance lighting overhead and audience seated in the orchestra balcony one, balcony two. And from a different perspective, from again, the first balcony looking back towards stage for a larger performance, popular music rock band taking the stage. So a lot of material to get through. The last segment didn't break up as much in Q&A, but happy to stop and open up the floor for further questions that we haven't gotten into yet or any other topics.
Great. So we'll open up the floor here in the gallery first if anybody has any questions. And then also, too, if you're on Zoom, you could just unmute your mic and state your name and address. But we're going to open it up to the gallery first.
You do might have a question.
Of course. I would hope you would after that presentation.
It was a great presentation.
Thank you.
I have so many questions that ain't going to happen tonight. So I'm going to read the report and then I'll do them in writing. I'm David Condon. I live at 50 Beatrice Drive in West Haven, Connecticut. I'm the president of Sterling Opera House Restoration, Inc., which is the 501c3 that's going to raise the money to do everything you just talked about. One of the questions I have is at no point in your presentation did you mention theatrical performances. Are you excluding those from consideration for this theater?
They would not be excluded. What again, we are not making a recommendation for is that there's a more extensive overhead rigging system that would fly large scenic drops out overhead of the proscenium opening. So theatrical performance could still take the stage. You could still bring smaller stage sets and props onto stage. It would not be, say, Broadway-style scale of theatrical performance, musical theater, and those types of things. Again, we, as part of the early process, evaluated much of that. And we were curious, too, where the market findings would come back, whether that would be a big driver behind the likely use case for the building or not.
I'm also thinking in terms of local theater production, center stage theater and those kind of things.
Right. So there's nothing that would prevent you from doing those types of performances in the building. It might be a rethinking of how the stage set works because it would be more modest.
Here's my point of view on the fundraising. We're going to get one shot at raising this money. So we better put everything in that we want in now, not in the future. I like your phasing idea. One big item that was left out of the fundraising is endowment, because we're going to have to endow this thing in order to continue to operate it, because we're not going to be able to rely on operations alone to fund it. So if it means that we have to put extra money in to put a fly system in, we do that. We just did a community theater in Indiana, and we put a modified fly system in that was built for smaller stages, but that works adequately for theatrical productions. I noticed that on the second floor, it's almost all dedicated to either the theater, front of the house, ticket sales, you know, and then behind that would be theater related for the actors and stuff. Okay. When I originally looked at the building, I was looking for areas for revenue streams. We have one local group that wants to rent the space for offices. That looks like that's gone. But for example, the old Aldermanic Chambers might have been be able to made into a restaurant, which would be a revenue stream and a producer. So the revenue production from that could fundamentally offset the cost of those renovations. And it would also be able to mean that building could stay in operation, you know, 6 or 7 days a week, even when theatrical performances were not being held. I'm trying to read my notes here. Revenue stream. So anyway, everything else, I think, you know, I can wait until I read the report. We're going to be having a follow-up meeting with the Valley Community Foundation, because we want to be able to work with them to be the recipient of the fundraising funds, so that they will deal with the tax implications. We'll have to work with you guys directly to determine how that will be. The phasing system will be really important, because first of all, I need to know the overall cost of what I got to raise, because then I got to add. I'm doing a project in New York right now. You know, it's a $40 billion building. It carries a $10 million endowment with it. I don't know what the endowment on this is going to be based on the total cost of construction. And I got to get this done fairly quickly, because I'm 78 and I'm donating my time, but I ain't going to be here forever. So we got to look at the timeline as to how we're going to do this. So if we're going to have the estimated cost, and like you said, in the next 30 days or so, we then can sit down and look at what the total estimated cost is, what the phases are, what we have to build into the endowment.
Right.
And we're going to be behind the eight ball a little bit that we didn't expect to be, because of the cutbacks in the endowment on the arts out of Washington and some of the federal and state. I don't think we'll have a problem with the state money under the governor's bonding commission, but we're definitely going to have problems coming out of Washington. The National Association for Historic Theater Restoration has funds. I've already been in contact with them. We'll look at what they've got for us. There are some local foundations, but not that would not fund it to the extent we'd love them to fund it. So this is a great first step. Hopefully in 30 days we'll have the cost and an estimated timeline for construction for each phase, because I'll need to know not only when you want to phase it in, but how long it's going to take to build those phases. And then we'll put the fundraising together. Right now we have three members of the 501c3, Tom Backlick, Matt Wielander, and myself. I didn't want to start building out the board until I knew what we had to raise, because I'm looking for people that have money and that are willing to put their money where their mouth is. And that's the next big step. So
sure.
In 30 days, we'll have the number. We'll begin to be able to put the game plan together. And then I will do an overall fundraising plan as to how we're going to attack this and the timing that we can expect. So I thank you for your efforts. You did a great job. And that's all I have.
So, Dave, just to give you a little bit of how the cost estimating is going to be presented, they're going to give us the cost of what it's going to cost, but then they're going to break it down where it's going to be projected out 2 years, correct?
Yes, the breakout line item that we'll carry or identify for cost escalation will be projected out about 2 years, but a percent line item that you'll be able to then magnify and escalate out further if it's determined that subsequent phases might happen 3 years, 4 years, whatever it might be.
We do that with all capital construction. Right now we're getting whacked. I've got three projects going on, one in Miami, one in California, one in New York. We're getting killed with steel prices. When we did the original game plan and budget, the steel prices were not where they are now. And now they're out of control. I just scored a home run. I got a company that manufactures steel in Pennsylvania that's going to donate all the steel for one building. I'm hoping we can get that same guy to come here. So anyway, but I appreciate that clarification. So I'm anxious to see the numbers. I'm not really anxious to see the numbers. I don't want to see the numbers, but I have to see the numbers. And we'll go from there. Now, anybody have any questions for me?
I don't, not at this time.
Okay.
I mean, I know
we're getting there.
I know what you're going to, your job is going to be coming up as soon as we button this up. So I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions for you once.
Yeah.
You know,
I only have one answer, so you better hit the right question.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Is there anyone on Zoom or online that has a question? Just please unmute your microphone and state your name and address for the record. Go ahead, Matt.
Once again, Matt Wielander, 377 Dogwood Road in Orange. First, I think it's really good work. I think you guys have found some really good answers to a lot of the problems that the Opera House is facing. I have two specific questions, and I think they fall within the scope of a feasibility study as far as the building and the changes that you're recommending. I didn't see any reference to the orchestra pit that exists, right? It's the shallow sort of Baroque pit that's in the volume of the auditorium. Whether or not we actually need one, I don't know. I don't know. My question is, I don't know if we need to keep that as far as the requirement to preserve the historic character of the space. And if it is there, if we can, I noticed that you did have seating in that. Maybe we just fill it in. I don't know
Right.
if that's something to add to the conversation as
It's
we
a
move
good point,
forward.
and we should evaluate that. We are proposing that some of the existing historic platforms in the anti-pro areas side of stage remain. They could be part of the concession areas in the orchestra level of the building. Same could be true of the Baroque style pit, but you're right.
Yeah, just definitely something to consider. And the other question I had was adding the grid and the extra structural capacity over the performance platform is excellent. I didn't know if you talked with McLaren about the possibility of needing any additional structural capacity over the auditorium for front of house lighting positions, follow spots, and things like that. I just didn't see any of that referenced in the presentation either. But I know eventually the users are going to want that sort of thing and some sort of a platform for follow spots that might also affect programming and structural capacity out there too. So that might be something worth discussing for the purposes of the study as well.
Sure.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone online that or on Zoom that has any questions? Just unmute your mic and state your name and address for the record, please.
Yeah, I have a question, Gino.
Go ahead, Brian.
So we talked a little bit about hiring a potential operator. How soon, due to your professional experience, how soon can we go ahead and start to kind of formulate a kind of a case study or essentially starting to groom certain dynamics in order to start to formulate an idea of who those operators are going to be?
Really, I think with the release of the market needs assessment, it gives you a lot of what you can begin doing, and getting that entity on board
It's going to be important.
sooner than later as part of the conversation will be invaluable.
So once we get that report back and finalized, then we can go out for an RFP, decide, invite, go through that process. Once we narrow it down, we can interview, whomever or however that process looks like. And then I believe what the best interest of the city and the Opera House is to enter into a MOU, which is sort of like a contract, but it's not. And then once we have that, then the phases will become more clear, because whoever the partner is at that time might want to configure things different ways or set things up different ways, and then we could kind of critique it towards what their needs are going to be, and it'll make the process go a little bit differently. But I think that's the best thing in the next course of action should be is go through the process, get the MOU signed, get our partner on board, and then we could piece out the phasing and kind of build the the extras around what their needs are going to be, and then go from there.
I agree with you, Gino, and I think as something too is that that would kind of quell any concerns that Dave brought up, with whether we have a in troupe, theater company or something like that. That I think that's the way to go, is to be dynamic, to understand what the space can provide, and be able to, fortify a operator that can be that dynamic to handle a local theater troupe, as well as create a revenue for a venue, whether it be comedians and what have you.
Go ahead, Mark.
Hi, Mark Anthony Izzo, 328 Olivia Street. First of all, great presentation, very
Thank
thorough.
you.
And thank you also for the commission for moving this forward. Also, I was part of the Save Our Sterling group that was before the commission way back when. And also, I was also part of a government program called CETA. And one of our jobs was to clean the mess that was in the Opera House. And our instructions were, if it wasn't nailed down, throw it out. Just to give you an idea, and I have pictures to prove it. And so I'm going to go through these. These are observations and inputs that I've had over the years that maybe you'll be hearing it for the first time. The interesting thing is some of the notes I was making, you happen to cover some of the stuff. So if you don't mind, I'll go quickly. And I don't have to have a dialogue unless you want to stop me to ask me questions about it. First thing, we had people come here and they diagrammed an elevator. Now, the elevator that they were discussing would be on the old West 4th Street there. And it was an atrium type thing. And it went up to, if you're familiar, there was a fire escape on that side of the building. And it would go up to that floor there. Something to consider if that's something that's worth investigating. It would have a little charm with the building itself there.
Mark, that's the same, that's in the same place as where this one is going to be going up to the same exact level.
Okay.
Just so that I know it's hard to see on
there. Yeah, I couldn't see the cursor from back there either.
Well, what we'll do is we'll get you the slideshow
and
I'll get it over to Mark and Mark can post it on our website as a part of a package.
Sure. And the other thing that was in discussion way back when is actually the building next door was empty. So the thought would be to have that building as some type of a restaurant type of deal and use their elevator and have a skyway across to where that exit ramp was there. And so I was just throwing that out there. Mm. Now, also through the years, we were told that the building could be emptied in 4 minutes back in its day because you had the stairs on both sides. You had this, the fire escape. You also had stairs. And you had the grand staircase, which, by the way, thank you very much for preserving that. Love that staircase. And also, there, you know about the staircase that's in the back of the stage there. So I just throwing that out there because that's what we've been told over the years. And while I'm talking about that particular staircase, there's also, there was a way where there's some boards up on the platform stage that can be lifted up, and they could used to be able to lift things up right through the floor there. Just thrown out there in case you didn't come across that. yep, just said that. And thank you. The grand staircase, thanks for preserving that. And again, emptied in 4 minutes. Cupola, there's... two cupolas were actually replaced, the main cupola, and you can see the supporting structure that's underneath it now, mm-hmm. big beams there. There's also the center cupola, and that was also used for ventilation. Now, the last time I took a peek up there, and back in the day, I actually climbed in there. Ain't going to happen anymore for me. But there was a plywood, I believe it's plywood that's laid down, mm-hmm. blocking that ventilation. Just throwing that out there in case you weren't aware that happened there. Again, I've been involved with the Opera House for years. At one time, I actually held the keys for it. On the main orchestra level, if you're looking out into the audience, in the far corner where the fire escape was there, there's that door there, there's a room there. And we believe it was a bathroom, okay? Maybe that's something that can be considered for concessions as well. Or utilities, some type of utilities run from there. And the other thing is, I have always said that any seating in there should be comfortable seating. And I'm a big guy, I like to be able to be comfortable there. And if you consider an armrest for each person instead of sharing them, it's just throwing that out there. Because if you're going to pay a big price for a ticket, you want to be comfortable. And also, I'm sure you've been to the sub-basement, and there was a furnace down there. And I believe that had the steam type of, I'm not familiar with that. But if you look behind the stage, you see all the piping that's there for the steam. And plus, there's a couple of radiators throughout the building as well. Just throwing that out there. Oh, yeah, and you've probably seen this, but I'm just throwing it out there again. When you're on the orchestra level, you can see the outline of the former seatings that were there.
Yes.
Okay, so just keeping that in mind if it falls into your floor design there. Lighting, rigging, and sound. I'm not really sure where you were talking about putting that, and because if it's going to be behind the orchestra level, or there was also talk up in the upper level. The only problem with that is bringing equipment up there, you know, unless it's already equipment that's already in place for sound and lighting. Matt would probably know better than me on that one there. Oh, yeah. This one is just, you know, because I'm into preserving things. And under the stage there, you've seen the wall of historical pictures, diagrams, all kinds of things that there. If there's any way in the plans to consider about preserving it. However, that's not my expertise there, but something to consider. Because as I said, we were told to throw everything out. Acoustics, and this is just an observation I had. And as I told you, I had the keys at one time. So what do you do when you have a stage like that? You sing. Okay, but I noticed one time when I was come when you come up the first level there to the orchestra level, and I happen to be singing there, your voice actually changes when you're there in that the hallway, and when you walk into the room there, you can actually hear the acoustics change there. So if you haven't tried it, try it out.
Did it change it for the better?
Yeah, focus it nice and tight, no echoey like type thing there. For my opinion.
I might try that then.
Yeah,
my singing is not too good.
What you do though when you're out there and in that area there, you just got to keep singing, but don't stop. You just have to. You can hear the change. Oh, good, don't do that to me. Yeah, this is an observation I had over the years when they say, well, what do you want to do there? I have a preference as the first show I'd like to see there, a big magic show, because nobody believed this would be pulled off. So this will really set them in their place. But when they ask me, I say, anything you can do on the stage. You can do it there, from graduations, business meetings, and et cetera, et cetera. The other thing is with the fire suppression. Sprinklers. I saw the diagram for that. And again, I'm not an expert. Is a consideration of maybe halon for the stage area, so water kind of like ruins things. And again, don't have to have an answer. I'm just throwing out there as an observation. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Great job,
appreciate
guys.
It.
Thank you.
Job. If there's anyone on Zoom that wishes to speak, you could just unmute your mic and we'll take you next. So just raise your hand and we'll get to you. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I just want to address the issue of the operating agreement. That's down the road. They're going to give us a number. We got to get that number. We're going to create the fundraising plan. Then we're going to create a master timeline for all of these phases and everything. And you got to start to build revenue in order to get to a point. And you got to know what you want the operator to actually do. So we have to come up with the job descriptions and stuff like that. Well, so
that's your job.
Yeah, but that's what
but
I'm saying.
The
is,
next job of the commission
the operating
is what we're going
is,
for.
Is not first and foremost. It's down the road.
Correct.
And when we get there, we'll know.
Right.
But, you know, these guys are going to give us a game plan. Much better, much more in depth than I even had hoped it would be, although I saw your last report, which was great. So we got a lot of thinking to do, and we're going to do that as a team. And then we'll create a master fundraising plan and a master timeline for the phases and the construction to determine. And it'll be based on how fast we can bring the income in, because don't forget, the majority of the gifts that are going to be made to this are going to be made over a five-year period for the payout. So what we use is called an intent to give form that was approved by the IRS, which is actually, you can collateralize it with the banks to put up the money to build the thing up front, which is you're talking about those phases. So once we get somebody gives us $1 million and they signed the intent to give form, we can take that to a bank and use that as collateral for the construction financing. And If we can get the Community Reinvestment Act involved, we can get the construction financing or little or no interest. So that's okay. That's all I want to say.
Well, I was just answering the question to Brian, and we're kind of on a two-prong thing. You know what I mean? There's the commission, 501c3. So your job is coming up, and it's going to be quite intense, and you're just the man for it. So I hope you're ready.
No, I'm not. But I'm going to fake it.
Well, thank you. That's the best answer I've heard. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to comment or ask a question on Zoom? Go ahead, Mark. Get ready.
All right. Yep. Thanks. All good discussions. I had some questions. Mark are following the town clerk. So can you just talk a little bit about the fly system? Like, how are those decisions made about the fly system and so forth?
Again, a lot of it came out of the original, the market needs assessment, understanding what the likely uses would be and how extensive a fly system would be needed. For the fly system to be most effective, we would really need to preserve the existing stage footprint. As we begin to shrink the platform, reduce the height, it becomes less effective. We're not able to fly equipment, scenery, backdrops, and such full out of the proscenium opening. It becomes a delicate balance. And so the process was really evaluating, do we go that whole route? We can physically. There's a lot of cost and complexity in doing so. Does the market really support all of the costs that would go into doing that? We don't want to recommend an approach that would set you up for financial challenge in the sort of payback of that upfront substantial capital cost in doing so. That type of fly system is more extensive. There would be overhead winches and battens and such that allow the backdrops to get lifted overhead. What's envisioned for more of the platform approach would be the structure overhead needed to hang a variety of different types of equipment, whether it's, you know, beam clamps that are hanging lighting trusses and speakers and theatrical lighting to light the performers on stage. There's still an ability there that would be baked into the design of the platform to allow those things to happen. It wouldn't be necessarily as extensive as, say, a Broadway style fly system.
Okay. I mean, so how was that choice made, I guess? Was there input given? Because it's like a choice now, and it's going to be left out of this assessment. So I guess.
No, it wasn't a choice by anybody. It was recommended from Duncan and his team with the market analysis. They recommended that we went with this type of system for the acts, the shows, and the performances that the market allows for. I mean, to be honest with you, we could put in whatever the city or whatever the entity wants to put in. This is just an overview of what the city hired them to do, to give us a market analysis on what the surrounding area and towns are looking for. What would be the best route for this theater? In the past, this other studies that we had tried to make this theater a Broadway theater, but the building is not set up for a Broadway theater. So when we asked them to do the study, they presented that the market, the surrounding area, where we are, ticket sales, and all of the things that go into the study, it spit out that this is the type of venue that the area and the market is looking at. So then they gave us what they just presented us with tonight, with some challenges in the way. And that's what we're presenting right now.
But there's not been any discussion. Like, this is the first time we're seeing any of this. So I guess,
First time any of us are seeing
it. But was it input given in the meantime, when since it was started?
I thought you were asking me.
We're trying to evaluate both scenarios as part of the study. So we're not trying to discount what the larger fly system would entail. That'll be part of the study, sort of the assessment of what all is involved in constructing that physically. We can have a cost assessment of what would be involved in doing so. And so again, we're not trying to lock in a specific direction by the end of the study. We're really trying to leave the wiggle room and the flexibility that it's a useful tool. So yes, the information shown tonight will be shared as part of the study, outlining what would be required to build the full fly system. It's not necessarily what we would recommend as the outcome of the study in the next step, but we're not trying to withhold that information by any means, or the information that you would need to make that decision as you move forward.
Well, I mean, to clarify, nobody ever said, no one ever. I never heard anybody say that it was going to be, that anybody even intended it to be a Broadway theater. Like, nobody ever said that in the 30 years that I have had discussions about the Sterling Theater. So, I mean,
Well,
like,
the first study in 2002 was set up for a typical Broadway theater. It was set up
I mean,
for out of
maybe
360.
for full scale performances, but
Yeah.
nobody ever believed it was going to be like the equipment that they have on Broadway. It's like
Well,
that doesn't
that's what
really
the
make any
first
sense.
market analysis stated in your
No,
design.
but
It said out of 365 days, they found that the theater would only have 164 show days. Because when you set up the scenes and the acts, if you sell tickets, you could only have 60
thank you.
164
Thank you
show
for
days.
that. I thank you. I appreciate that, being schooled in that. I get it. I'm just trying to understand, hearing this for the first time tonight without the benefit of seeing it physically. We're talking about performance types. It was very limited. What you described was very limited. So I'm just trying to understand, like, is it just going to be concerts and comedy hours?
It will be whatever we want
No,
it to
I'm
be.
just so I'm just trying to understand the methodology, because
So
if
ticket
it's
analysis
no, I understand,
is
but
the methodology. They
okay.
had a market analysis. They
Okay. I'm just trying to understand, like, was there
when you were
input?
given the first phase of this, I gave it to you personally, just so you know.
The
And
input
remember, you got the documents, I handed them to you, you asked for them.
in
So
the
you did have the first phase
okay.
of this.
And
And
we
the
had all the workshops. And everybody sat here and we put them all together. We had the big whiteboard with
It
the
was a
whole full
statistical
team.
feasibility study. It doesn't mean that we're not
I
gonna.
know, but everybody asks questions, and I know it annoys you folks when you hear my
We're
voice,
giving
which
answers, but you keep coming back with the same
no,
question, and like, we're
I'm
not
just
answering it.
asking questions. I'm just
We're answering you.
asking. Okay, I keep. Okay,
I'm just answering you. I'm not annoyed. I'm just
okay,
trying to
and
answer
I'm
you.
just trying to say, like, when we're talking about things. In my opinion, in my experience, they're having some type of fly system because there are no wings. I mean, if there was wing space, it would be a very different kind of discussion. But the to there, ha I can't. I mean, I have to believe that there's some kind of system that would allow for modest scenery at this level in a house of 500 at whatever level of quality it is, that there that would be something that would be value added. And to one of my points was,
But did you not say that?
yeah, let him go ahead, let him
What
talk.
Matt stated too, like the lighting, not all lighting comes from the stage, right? There's a need for lighting facing the stage. And also too, like from a space perspective, is it, I mean, I saw what you said. I mean, and I always wondered if the third, what I would call the balcony, the third level, not the mezzanine, is that safe? Because the pitch, at least in its current format, is, as somebody that's not really, enamored with heights, that's pretty, it's pretty an interesting point. So is that a better place for the sound and lighting board? It's just a question to get more orchestra seats. It's something that could be looked at, I guess. The other thing that I think that we should think about is the windows in the theater itself. I mean, the practical reality is there's no need for windows in there, because if you have a performance during the day, you want them, you need curtains or something to block the light. Otherwise, it's gonna take away from that. It's like a practical thing that no, you don't, because the light, the natural light in there now is beautiful, but in the context of a performance, it doesn't really help, or you have to have some system for that. And then to echo Mark Anthony's point, I think that we have to make sure that the seating is comfortable and practical in that sense, and accessible in terms of that. And I think that the process has to be open to input from everybody. Like, so from people we like and people we don't like. This isn't about not about who we like or who we don't like. This is about putting our adult hats on and separating whatever angst anybody has with each other toward a common purpose of renovating the theater. And it's an asset for the community. So, and I think that there have been some good points. And again, to Dave's point, I think we need to look at, the whole picture of this, because we have to play the long game, not the short game on it, even though it's been painfully long time, but still the long game will probably serve us better going forward.
Well, we
Thank you.
certainly are not trying to have in any way a closed process. We hear you. We started at the outset before we knew what the market need would be indicating, what the more extensive system would be. We can provide a breakout cost for what that alternate would be. And maybe what we do in the study is define an alternate for the more extensive rigging system. So again, as you move forward, you're equipped with the information. We want to make sure that, again, you have the information you need for all potential options, as you move forward.
Well, it was discussed. There was some discussion of this. I listened to the recording of the last meeting, so there was clearly some dialogue about it. So I'm just trying to bring everybody up, get myself up to speed, and whoever else needs to be brought up on it.
Okay, we invite everybody to come to these meetings and provide input. You're the only one that comes. You're the only one that's here. I don't see anybody else that's been invited except Linda. So you're here. Put your input. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's not asking you.
I don't know. I was trying to get
It
it.
has nothing to do with who we like and who we don't like, because there's plenty of that on the opposite side as well.
Okay. Are you done, Mark? Any
Yep.
other questions?
That's it.
Okay. I have a question here from Jessica Renew, RENFREW, Refew, maybe. I apologize that I'm butchering your name, 254 Elizabeth Street. What will the process be to get contractors with the appropriate experience to do the historical restoration work? Will it be an RFP process to be reviewed and approved by the commission? My answer to that is once we get to the next step, the job or the renovation will definitely go out through an RFP. I believe, which is subject to change, that we'll probably hire a general contractor that'll kind of oversee the whole project and all the different divisions that'll be needed between HVAC and site work and so forth and so on. But it'll definitely be through an RFP process. They will be vetted, kind of like the process that we did to hire Steinberg Hart in a general sense.
When you go through the competitive bidding process, the bid documents have to ask the contractor to put in their contributions in kind. So when they submit their proposals, the in-kind contributions are listed, so you're comparing apples and apples.
Right.
Because it's not uncommon to be able to save 15 to 20% of the total construction through in-kind. That's the way we did the fly system in Indiana. The company that built the fly system, I think, was $1 million plus fly system. And we put it into an old warehouse to do it, but they agreed to donate half of the cost of the fly system. So that's what I'm hoping we can replicate here. You know the name of the company, Indiana Fly System.
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. So we have the contact with them already. They've already had some experience with us. So I'm hoping that we can do that and actually get it installed at a much lower cost level. And it doesn't have to be a Broadway level fly system. It has to be a fly system that fits our needs. Because like I said before, we're going to raise this money once. So if we do it and we decide eventually we're going to put the fly system in, you can't go out for 10 years from the time we finish this capital campaign. So we better make sure everything that we want is in there.
Okay. The last question that I have here is from Brenner Collette, 157 Minerva Street in Derby. I'm curious to why there's no talk of having a movie screening. Movie screenings, was a screen and projector an option, and was that considered? Where it's set up for that. I mean,
it's set up for that via portable equipment. Again, one of the secondary uses, potential uses, could be curated film screenings and of that sort, but certainly a room that could be equipped with that. A screen could be hung from, again, the rigging system on stage. Projectors could be portable. That equipment can be allowed for within the cost budgets. But yes, that's an option.
That's all I have. Is there anybody else from the gallery? If not, we'll move on to our next. Is there anybody with their hands up over there, Mark? Online? No? Okay. With that
I have something, Gino.
Yes, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to address Mr. Garfalo's concerns. And, I just would like to mention that I appreciate his concerns. And I know that he is a lead actor in the center stage. And hopefully that is going to be the troupe that is going to be our home company. I just want to kind of just stress and hopefully alleviate any concern and saying that this is the part that when we find an operator, that is someone who's going to be able to come to the fold and to be able to look at these things. And I appreciate Mr. Condon's approach to things, and I believe that he's absolutely right. But Mark, Mr. Garfalo, I just want to say that this is something that we take very seriously. And, we hope that your troop might be able to put on some shows. And we really want that as well. So I appreciate his input. We just want to make sure that all parties involved are going to be able to, be content and be happy with this further plan.
Thank you, Brian. All right, we'll move on to number 7, new business. I have none. Dana? No? All right. Before we close, I just want to say to Evan Steinberg-Hart, Duncan, and the rest of the team for putting on this presentation and to getting us to the point that we're at. Right now, I know there's more work to do. I'm sure that Evan will go back and take the suggestions and all the information that was either asked or provided here tonight. We'll put some final touches on it. And once we get the costs back in, 30 days or so, we'll be back for the next update. But I just want to thank you and your team for where we are. And I don't know, but it's a lot of work, and I think you guys are doing a great job thus far. So thank you with that.
Thank you.
We'll move on to number 8, motion to adjourn at 8:13.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Bryant, all in favor? Perfect. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys next month.